Welcome to the ETOP podcast. I'm your host, Richard Walsh, best-selling author of Escape the Owner Prison, the contractor's new way to scale, regain control, and fast-track growth while loving life. Another fantastic guest today. I am excited to introduce Michael Vann. He's president of the Vann Group. All right, we're going to get into some cool stuff today, talking about business, selling businesses, but I'm going to let Michael do his own introduction, his backstory. Michael, why don't you come on board here? Let's get started.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me. So as you said, name's Michael Vann. I'm the president of the Vann Group. We're a family-owned business, multi-generational. I'm in business with my father, my mother, and my sister. We're a strategic consulting and transactional advisory firm that works with the owners of privately held businesses. Most of those are what we'll call second stage companies. So revenue, you know, typically ranging from $1 million to $50 million. We all have varying challenges, whether it's with growth or figuring out their transition or just how do we get out of this business? So we try to help them with all those things.
Excellent. That is perfect because, you know, who we deal with, right? So I deal with, my main focus is contractors, service industry, yep. Trades and service industry. So we've all been in business. I'm still in business. Everyone listening is usually in business. And again, they're in that same zone, 1 to 50 million. Some guys say they're killing it, doing 100 million. That's great. You know, but yep. What we found and what I found and what my book's based on is that owner prison is those guys trapped in that kind of, in that cycle, you know, that do everything. And they'll continue to do everything themselves or, you know, grow to a certain point, but then it just levels out and they can't seem to get past that. And one thing I've always, that I do teach is, you know, exit strategy and really trying to begin with the end in mind and figuring out what are you going to do with this business? Is you hand it down to the kids? Are you going to sell it? Do you want monstrous profit? You just want to walk away from it? There's a lot of different options, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we do a lot of work in the construction space as well. And it's definitely has some uniqueness to it from an exit. You know, because it doesn't necessarily have the stability at some of these others, because it's all, as you know, a lot of it is project to project. So if, whether it's bid or even it's sole source, project gets built and we're done, it's on to the next one. So there's some really candid conversations with the owners of construction companies about what the continuity looks like on that and how those get structured and who buys them.
Right. That's a great point. You know, just like I know guys, it'll be in the storm restoration field, right? So a storm hits, they go out and they sell $30 million worth of work. You know, then the storm's gone, the work's finished, then what? You know, I don't get to go buy that, buy stuff that's already done, right? That's kind of what you're saying. So that is a challenge.
Yeah, there's a lot of goodwill built into those businesses. And it's a question of how do you transition that unless, you know, you're able to build some reoccurring revenue, you know, and some of the trades are definitely capable of doing that, like in the HVAC side of things or the plumbing side, and you know, with maintenance contracts, some of the facility management are able to build some sustainable value. But for everyone else, it's definitely harder.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I teach too, and I try to help people with, we talk a lot about lifetime profitable value, right? LPV. Yep. So I like, you know, guys who are local, guys who aren't maybe traveling the country, you know, whether it's storm chasing or whatever the case, but if you're a local construction guy, you do, even though you say you do a roof for someone, that's fantastic, but they also have siding and windows and gutters, and there's many other things that you can offer. And the goal is to stay front of mind, make them accustomed for life, not, hey, I put a roof on C in 30 years. You know, exactly. So you don't want that. So, you know, the whole goal, I think, and, you know, let me know if you, you know, got some insight on this, is as you build that list, I think as we build the customer list, again, the recurring revenue, you know, because windows, hey, you can spend anywhere from $1,000 to $50,000 or more on windows, you know, so that's a big number. Citing same thing. So as we build these customers and you see there's recurring revenue, that's going to be attractive to a potential buyer, right? Maybe someone looking to pick up more market share or something in that realm, right?
Absolutely. And it, as you know, it provides stability too. So when, you know, there is the cyclicality, a little recession or something, you've got something to fall back on. So you don't have to, you know, wipe out your entire infrastructure, you know, because the bidding is slowed down and the awards have slowed down.
Right. It's and if anything's taught us anything this year, 2020 here, it is, you know, the ability to pivot, you know, absolutely, pivot and make things work. And maybe it's create a new revenue stream, or, you know, just find that uniqueness of your business if you haven't created it already, which is always another thing that you want to have, is there's got to be something unique about your business, how you deliver your product or service, you know, that really sets you apart. So again, you can build that customer list.
Right.
That's fantastic. So let me ask you that. So let's say, let's kind of start at the beginning. You know, when someone wants to build a business to sell, okay, let's say they put a 10-year time limit on it. I want to be this 10 years and I will sell this and move on to something else, right? Now, I know it's, I know as for exact specifics, every business is different, but what would be some of your first couple of points that you would recommend?
So the first point, and we tell this to every business owner that we talk to, is if you're looking for a successful exit, the first thing to do is to build a business so it can function without you. You know, how do we replace you? If the business doesn't need you, then it's sustainable and it's transferable better than if you're a key cog in that business, you know, particularly in something in the trades, because there's so much assumption that it's based on your personal relationships. So being able to build a good, solid, you know, management and leadership team underneath you helps ensure that continuity. So that's definitely the piece that we focus on first. The other thing we talk a lot about is understanding three different things. First, when do you want to exit? Who do you want to exit to? And then how much do you want to get on an exit? And you need to have the answer to those three questions, because they're all interrelated and they're all going to determine the ease of your exit, you know, when that is possible, and, you know, who can possibly you exit to. You know, if you're looking to maximize your value on an exit, you may not be able to sell it internally because your internal team may not have the resources. But if you're looking to make sure you've got a nice, easy transition and, you know, can stretch that out over time, then maybe your internal team is the best approach. So you have to think about those things as an owner as to what are you really looking to accomplish with an exit. So start the process from there.
Yeah. So in the beginning, you know, fledgling business startup, right? There you are. Obviously, we all know we need to have great teams and build this. But I think when you're trying to make that decision, where you were just talking about, you don't know if there's going to be, you know, that ability to hand off, right?
Right.
So obviously, you can start. Okay, like I said, you want to start with, I want to get out in 10 years. I want, you know, 5 million, you know, cash for the business, you know, liquidate, wash, you know, shake hands, I'm out, right? You're not buying me.
Right.
That's the whole thing. So, you know, you put that in. Now, obviously, if these teams develop and you get someone who maybe an internal transfer is a better thing, you know, there's pluses and minuses to both sides, right?
Right. No, there definitely is. I mean, internal transitions are great for continuity. They're great for legacy. The downside, though, is the capital, you know, the valuation may not be there at the same level. So that's something to contemplate. Like I said, if you're looking to maximize your value, an internal transition is not the most obvious approach to take. But if you're looking to create cash flow and legacy, then an internal transition might be the perfect way to go.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, down to your kids, right? Maybe
exactly.
A brother or sister or something like that. Someone wants to take over. You want to exit, go do other things. And at least that potential is there, that possibility. And it can still be profitable for both sides, right?
Yes, it can. And I think, you know, when you start a business, and I know most business owners, particularly in the trades, don't think about it in those terms of, well, what's an exit look like? We're just trying to get through and we're very involved in the day-to-day of the business, right? You're a carpenter or a plumber or whatever. That's what you do. It's why you started the business. You do have to be intentional if you want to get to that type of exit about putting the company in a position where it can grow. So it's not about you. And it takes a special leader to be able to do that.
I agree. I mean, again, that's what I teach and preach, and it's, you know, it's not for everybody, you know, being that person, being that special leader, that person who, you know, literally is building something to sell, because again, you're taking guys who are literally, they're technicians who started the business.
Exactly.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they got a passion for it. They're great at it, but the difficulty is making that transition to a real business owner, where again, you are delegating, you're eliminating positions, you're delegating, you're giving it to the people, you know, who can pick up the ball and run with it.
Yeah. And it's hard to build those teams, and it takes a lot of work. But we have a client right now that we've been working with several years, who's, you know, in that transition from, this is, you know, me working in the business to me working on the business. And they're doing a great job because they're very intentional about every decision he makes. And he's built a leadership team, and he's brought in the management systems and everything to do that. So, you know, they've gone from, you know, several million up to, you know, 12 to 15 million with plans to get to a much larger number, you know, over the coming years. So it's very intentional in the strategy and how they're approaching the business. They recognize that the value someday is on an exit, and they need to be positioned for that.
Did they start that way, or was that something they kind of grew into and then made a decision? Do you know?
I think it's something they grew into, you know, and I think that's pretty typical for most businesses. You know, if we start as a startup or an early stage company, the only thing we know is that we can't continue to be a startup. So we're chasing the most reasonable market we can get to create some sustainable cash flow. Once you get past that standpoint in there, you're into kind of these fun stages where the business is self-sustainable for a period of time. They have to be deliberate as to, you know, what do they want to do? Do they want to create a lifestyle business, or do they want to create something that's going to be scalable? So it doesn't necessarily start that way. I've found with most, you know, with most construction related companies, it's, you know, I'm really good at this, so that's what I'm going to do. And then suddenly they see, hey, they have this opportunity to build a company, and then they make the decision to do that.
Yeah, that would be the majority of people that I run into, right, in my circles and stuff, because, well, we're excited, we got tired of working for this guy, and, you know, I can do it better, and they get started, and then there they go, and then it hits them. You know, a couple years later, all of a sudden, it's like, wow, there's a lot more to this than I thought.
Yeah, you know, and as you know, those businesses, they're bootstrapped. You know, it's buying one piece of equipment at a time. It's not like, oh, we're going to get venture capital or raise capital from somebody to grow this business quick. It's, you know, it's literally one piece at a time. Oh, we're going to buy that truck. We're going to buy that, you know, whatever it might be, that backhoe. So it takes time to realize, you know what, we've built something here. Now we can think about how do we take it to the next level.
Right, and that's critical. And that's where I think people like you come in. It's a really needed service, actually. You know, I mean, I know people are out there. You know, I was glad to meet you and stuff too, to bring this information to everybody, because you kind of don't really know where to go. Again, if you've gone from that technician, you're in the business, you're growing things, like you said, now all of a sudden, wow, I've got, you know, I got four crews going, I've got eight trucks, I've got, you know, oh, I'm doing, you know, $7.5 million a year now, but I'm about to drown because I just don't know where to go with this, you know. So now you try to, that's when you level off and you hit that, now you're struggling to just stay at your peak, in a sense, and then you can't go any further. So guys don't really have a resource to go to give them that consultation and give them direction.
No, definitely they don't, because I hate to say this, but I don't think it's been thought of a lot when we talk about the smaller mid-sized businesses, particularly in some of our fields like construction, that these are businesses that can scale. We need to think about how do we run these as business organizations. They just happen to be construction related or restaurants or something like that. You know, it's a different mindset, you know, from when you're taking someone who's got a lot of technical aptitude at something and getting them to switch gears. So I don't think there's a lot of advisors out there who, you know, chase those types of businesses. They're like, oh, we like the software businesses or some of the professional services or manufacturing. But, you know, construction has some really great opportunities to scale and build a lot of value, you know, over time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my whole purpose is to help people do this, right? Escaping the owner prison, for me, that's what it's about. You know, getting freedom yourself, getting your business to run without you. That's the goal. Now, granted, you're always the leader until you step away. That's how I look at it. You know, Right. Yes, it doesn't need me day to day. I can leave for a month, come back. Oh, look, we're more profitable. It's good. That's how you want to build it. but it still needs that vision and that leadership, especially if you want to scale. You know, if you want your business to scale, it's never involved. If you want to scale, and again, the importance of having that exit strategy of, you know, what's enough? You know, what's your number? Picking right. that, how you want to do it. You know, now everyone can pick a number because that's really easy. I get a dartboard and pick a number, right? But I'm talking about having a real plan that what I always teach is your exit strategy becomes the filter that you make every business decision through, right? You take exactly. all this stuff in, and if you're going to buy a truck, you got to go, how does this fit into my exit strategy?
Right. Exactly. And like I said, to your point, it's very deliberate in those decisions. And one of the first things we do when we start a planning engagement with someone, you know, and this is someone who's thinking longer term on an exit, not like get me out today, is have you sat down with a financial advisor and thought through what is it you really need and want from your personal lifestyle standpoint? And how does the business value factor into that? And then once you know those numbers, what are you prepared to do to grow the business to that point? Because you've got to be committed to it if you're looking to get a certain number. The business isn't just going to do that overnight. You've got to make those decisions and those sacrifices, which, you know, can be really hard in the present to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but that's, you know, as always stressed, just like you're stressing here, it's about having that plan. Because if you don't have a plan, sacrifice isn't worth anything, right? All you're doing is mad because you can't go out or you can't get the truck you wanted to get or something. You don't understand what you're sacrificing for. So that sacrifice is not really going to happen. And all it's going to do is slow your exit down for one, but it's also going to slow the growth of your company. You're not going to be able to create that lifestyle that you want because you haven't really laid it out, right?
Exactly. You know, when we sit down on the planning side with our clients, we talk about, all right, well, what's the vision for the company in 10 years? What does it look like in 3 years? What do we want to accomplish this year? So, you know, we've got that constantly in mind as to where we're trying to get to. As you know, where a lot of companies lose it is they lose sight of what they're trying to achieve. They get stuck in the weeds in the day-to-day of the business and look at the end of the year and go, huh, we didn't really make any money, but we went through a lot of pain. Why is that? And the part is because you weren't focused on what you were doing. You weren't strategic in your actions.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's just so well said. I mean, it's the most difficult thing in business, to me. You know, to be able to, again, you know, ask anyone on January 1st or January 2nd what their goals are, and then ask them again in February, right? And then they're all exactly. gone. Okay, they won't have any more. They can't remember what they were. You know, the piece of paper fell underneath the bed and they haven't looked at it since. You know, so it's that intentionality that's so important when you want to get this business somewhere, right? You want to get it till you can leave. You know, you want that big dollar amount or whatever the case is. It's so important to have that plan and to visit that plan repeatedly, right?
Yeah. Our clients, you know, we meet with them on a quarterly basis with their whole leadership teams to review those, everything base by base, because it provides that recollection. But we also advise them, you know what, every week in your team meeting, pull out the strategy, look at it for 5 minutes before you start your meeting, just so you refresh your memory as to what it is you're trying to accomplish. Because we do lose sight of those things. I mean, years ago, we used to do strategic planning, and you do these great offsites every year. And you build this plan, and then we'd go back to work and forget about it until the next year when we were doing planning again. So you can't run the business that way and expect to get ahead.
Yeah, because if it's not front of mind, just like I want their customers to be front of mind of their business. Yeah, your goals and, you know, each step has to be there. You got to see the steps you have to take. If you're not looking at those steps, you're not taking them. And that's so important. One of the things, what do you think a buyer? Let's go to buyers, okay? So now we're building this business. We wanna sell it. You know, again, I guess let's stick with our trades, okay? We're in trades, whether it's HVAC, plumbing, roofing, construction, whatever that is, just in general, you know, what is a buyer actually looking for?
So that's an interesting question because it's Let's think about it from the broad standpoint. First, they want to know that what they're buying is going to is sustainable. You know, so what you're presenting to them as the business today, they can have some reasonable confidence that it's going to be there tomorrow, you know, provided they don't really screw it up. So they're looking at what are those pieces in place? You know, so again, do we have good people around us? Do we have a good solid customer and client base that we're serving? How's our work coming to us? You know, is it a lot of sole source work, or are we just, you know, low bidder? Have we been able to create some diversity or special niches that are going to get people to call us? You know, those are the types of things that jump at me immediately when I look at something. You know, then you're also looking, well, what do we see? You know, how are the margins? How's the, you know, what's the backlog looking like? You know, is it the type of work that we want? You know, what's the labor force looking like? You know, is it a lot of old guys who are retiring, or you got a good mix of youth and experience mixed in? You know, those I think are the types of things that we look like. And then, you know, one that we've seen really become really important is how are you doing with attracting and retaining talent? That has been so critical, particularly in the licensed, you know, trades. If you're talking electricians or plumbers, it's like, all right, we start with the process that anybody who's got a license is hireable, but then how do we flesh them out quickly and make sure we keep the right ones and get rid of the ones who don't fit? So a lot of focus on culture. You know, when we look at opportunities, we're looking at, you know, do people like to work there? Are they good people? Do they, you know, align to the company's values? How's that going to align with us if we're acquiring them?
That is a great, great point. We were just talking about that the other day too, because I was talking with a small operation. He's got three guys working for him. Can do anything, but he's a craftsman. Okay, so you get a craftsman. Yeah. Just everything is awesome, no matter what he does, right? But again, he's happy where he's at. Got a couple of people. He's got no plan of selling the business or anything else. He's just going until he's done. You know, saving his money, making money, and that's all good. That's him. But the key is, we were talking just the other day, he's 56 now, 57. Coming up in the trades, again, you're talking licensed people, certified, things like that, there's the pool is shallow.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not there. So, you know, we were talking like he's going to be in a position, honestly, in the next couple of years to charge whatever he wants, because there's not people to do what he does.
Right.
At that level. So there's a void, there's a vacuum there now. I know trade schools are getting bigger and things like that, and people are doing things, but people have to be reintroduced into this line of work to fill that vacancy. There is so much money to be made. And if you're able to come into that with a business mindset, and you go, let's say you get technical training, right? Apprenticeship, whatever,
yep,
to do technical college. You come out with the skills to do it. Like, it doesn't mean you're the greatest HVAC guy around, the greatest plumber, but you can do it. But your idea is to run a business that way. But now you understand the business. Now you've got something that you could really capitalize on, build that talent, build that culture that's going to fit the younger, you know, the millennials and whatever you have, work with this, and then you can actually create something that could be very sellable, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think part of that comes to embracing some of the new technology that's starting to emerge, you know, because the labor is such a challenge. Well, how do we do things more efficiently, more effectively? What, you know, what can we leverage out of this? What are the different building methods we're seeing coming to the forefront? So how do we use information better? And that takes, you know, that takes a different mindset than what we've traditionally seen in the industry.
Yeah, I agree. You know, have you had experience with people? Because I've thought about this and things. I've been doing this 30 some years. You know, I look back at my circle of influence. Actually, was phenomenal. I just wouldn't take advantage of it. I was an idiot. You know, I wouldn't ask them to help me. So, you know, now I warn everybody, listen, you got to talk to people. You got to get help. You got to, you know, you can make this happen. But the same thing, you can look at that and again, use this to really build something spectacular. you know, but you've got to reach out and you've got to get advice from these people. People like you, even Michael here, that's the whole point, right? You've got to come right in there and build this plan and figure out how you can make it scalable and sellable, right?
Absolutely. And some of it is applying practices from other industries. You know, and I'll use a great example. We had a client years ago, it was a bakery. And you think, all right, yeah, it's cooking, it's baking this. If you looked at how they built their company, they weren't baking, they were manufacturing food. You know, with the equipment they would bring in and the systems and running with lean methodologies and just-in-time purchasing and inventory, all these things that, you know, you wouldn't expect from a bakery, but they looked at it as they were manufacturers, not a bakery. And construction kind of has to apply some of that same thinking is, well, how do other industries scale? What do they do differently? How do we apply those lessons and technologies to what we do to get better? Because, you know, if we can only make money just by leveraging, you know, how many hours we got in the field by guys, we got to figure out how do we make that more efficient.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, you got to kick grandma out of the kitchen, right?
Right.
We're going to tool this up. It's conveyor belts everywhere. You know, but you can go back to things like, you know, Pizza Hut,
yeah,
Little Caesars, conveyor pizzas. You know,
Domino's is a great example.
Right. You know, so they took it, they scale it. It's amazing. I did a podcast on the thing on Little Caesars Pizza, right? They've been around since the 50s.
Yeah.
Right. But what was so cool is they worked into this portal thing, right? We get order online, you go in and you punch your little number in, it pops the door open, you put your pizza out and you leave. No human interaction, right?
Right.
Who was poised for COVID? Little Caesars.
Yes, Little Caesars and Domino's and those guys.
Boom. I mean, they just killed it, right? So I looked at that and I also, you know, because I had an experience there, same thing, you know. Yes, they're eliminating some people. They're always going to have some people. But for the most part, it's a customer experience they've changed. Because you don't get a good customer experience when you go pick up your pizza at a Little Caesars or a Domino's, okay? You're not going there for the ambiance, or even you're hoping there's just someone presentable that's going to take your money, right? So they've now circumvented that. Now you just have a few, two, three guys in the back putting pizzas on the conveyor belt.
You know? Yeah, they figured out what the customer values on their model, which is the speed, the cost, and, you know, reasonable proximity of quality.
Exactly.
So it's not about the experience. So so they've adapted the model, you know, and have been really successful with it.
Yeah. It's I always tell people, like McDonald's, same thing. They're not good food. They're cheap and fast.
Right. So you can get two of the three.
Right. You know, and that's it. And they're a gazillion dollars, you know, so it's all good. That's awesome. So we talked a little bit about business leadership and team management. Let's take this up one more notch here on how important that is from the sale aspect of a business, right? And I want to lean on your experience on this. Do you ever have, I mean, it's happened, but you know, you're going to walk away. I'm the business owner. It's time for me to walk away. I've got my number. I got this. I have great people in place. That's what people are buying. What is there a general percentage of the teams that stay with that business, with the new business owner, right? Or have you seen any jump in ship, or, you know, how does that come down as far as a leadership standpoint goes?
You know, in our experience anyways, in the vast majority of cases, the teams remain, you know. Again, it comes down to a new buyer not screwing it up, which, you know, sometimes it can be challenging not to do that because they want to change things. But most of the key people I've seen in our transactions stay for a pretty extended period of time because they were comfortable with the company, comfortable with what they were doing. We've seen incentives provided to ensure that continuity, you know, which is something a seller needs to consider. You know, if there's retention tied to the purchase price, you know, make sure that your key people are staying in place. But I think that's been the experience that most people stay.
Well, that's good. That's actually really, you know, good. Again, you know, it comes down to building your company culture, building a place people want to work. You know, because I basically stopped calling people employees anymore. It's always about teams and team members, because a team is responsible for each other. You know, an employee is responsible for themselves. It's what's in it for me. It's I want to get more. I don't want to go in today. You know, there's no real connection there. But when you build it in a team sense, you really have a collaboration. And it's a really great way to increase your scaling. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you've got a good solid team of foremans and supers, you know, who they can manage, you know, crew turnover. If they can keep that continuity, because they know the history of the business, they know how you want things done, they know how to make it to go. So you kind of leave them in a hands-off position. Just let them do what they do best, and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. That's the thing we all strive for, believe me, trades. Like I've been doing it long enough where back in, go back a little bit, 2000, right? We had super low unemployment then too, right? I was like 4.67 or something. Yeah. I couldn't hire anybody, right? Anyone who didn't have a job didn't want to work. You know, I would get 7 phone calls on a day looking for a job. I'm like, show up in the morning with your boots and a lunch. You know, we'll get started. Nobody showed up. Right. So I was going through, and then the guys I did have, I went through about 4 crews that season. You know, I mean, it was nuts. It was just absolutely nuts. I learned like, okay, I'm looking for employed people. So I started going to the Home Depots. You know, I'm looking for contractors who are working. Yep. Guys who are working pickups. So I go, so what do you do? And I get talking to them, you know, because I always tell people, it doesn't mean just because they're working doesn't mean they're happy where they're working.
Exactly.
But they're working. Okay. That's a huge plus. Right. Yep. So that's kind of how I started my new recruiting methods. You know, find the willing, able, and working. Right. So it was kind of interesting, but it was a challenge, just like it is now. I mean, it's more now than it was then, I think, even.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely been a change in the approach you need to take with crews and stuff with your manager, you know, your foreman and stuff. I think that old school approach of, well, this is the way it is and you're gonna work like this, you know, has to adapt to this new generation. You know, you have to engage them differently, and it's not barking at them. It's working with them to maximize the value. So I think that, you know, the leadership and management skills you need up and down your organization have changed drastically.
Yeah, I agree. Going back, I had a guy I worked for when I was young, and here was a saying, you know, don't drink more than you can sweat because we don't take bathroom breaks. So it was, I mean, you're talking, he was hardcore.
Yeah.
Right? He was like, man, you know, so yeah, didn't stay there a long time either. And I can work, okay, but I had bigger things to do. But as a young kid, you're like, holy cow, yeah, I can tough it out. But that was, yeah, so things have definitely changed that way. And it is for the better. It really is.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, you get more productivity out of people. You know, they can't, no one with a job, no staff member, no employee, no team member, you know, wants to commit their entire life to your business. That's just reality.
Right.
And when I was younger, I didn't think that was real. I thought, everyone, why don't you love it like I do? You know, and I really had to learn that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, more than I care to talk about. But, you know, people, I think we get that now, you know, and people make the accommodations to make things work for people.
Well, that's, you know, you bring up an interesting point. It's one of the challenges we see sometimes with internal transitions. You know, we'll talk to an owner about what an exit looks like, and they think, well, I want my people to have the company. This is a great opportunity I'm providing. Not recognizing that most people don't have an ownership mindset. You know, they're not that level of risk taking or don't want to be in that position. They're happy with what they have and certainly want to get ahead, but their definition of success isn't the same as those of us who are entrepreneurial. And we've seen a lot of hard lessons learned that way from some owners who've been adamant about making sure that the business transitions to employees when the employees really don't want it. And that ultimately comes to the forefront and the transition fails.
Yeah, that's good insight, because I also learned that same thing. Like, you think, I learned to look for the people who don't want to be an owner.
Right.
Right. That's actually who you want. Someone who, like, I actually like coming here and working every day and going home and not thinking about this place, you know, and coming back the next day and give you everything I got. Then I go home and it's all good. And they're there. You know, my crews, I had four guys in particular who just 10 years straight, never missed a day of work, just loved it. you know, came, they worked, whatever I needed, they did. Awesome guys, did the best work ever, and I loved them. But they did that. They came, they went home, they came, they went home. You know, it was just good. You know, they made great money. Everyone was happy, you know, but I wasn't able to, you know, duplicate that, you know, times, you know, 12, you know, so it's difficult. So you really got to understand the mindset. And like you said, again, we always come back to company culture, and that's something that takes time to develop, you know, and then once you get those people and keeping them, and you got to stay, it's kind of like working on your exit strategy and looking at it all the time. Same thing with company culture, because it is part of your exit strategy. You've got to look at that, and you got to connect with your people. And that's part of leadership. Connecting to see what's going on. How can we adjust? How can we tweak? What's happening? You know, how can we make this better for you? It doesn't mean you're a doormat.
Be very intentional.
Right. It doesn't mean you're a doormat and they get whatever they want, you know, but still it's based on performance and everything else, and we can get this stuff done. So yeah, that's just I think that's a very, very good, very solid thing we're talking about today, as far as, you know, saleability of your business, you know, and what you're actually building inside the business is one of the top driving factors, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
Definitely is.
That's great. Let me see. I've got, we just talked about, I'm looking at my question because I'm kind of going through these, but boy, I'm just thinking, we just talked about, like, see, I just had a change of thought here on the transitioning and the sale of a business, you know, as you're going through this stuff. And I would think this is, you know, me, I've never transitioned, given to someone I've sold, goodbye. Okay, I'm getting out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think one of the toughest things to work with is family. Okay, it's got to be one of the most difficult things ever. I've seen a number of family-run businesses. Now, you have a family-run business, right? So you can speak with pure authority here, okay? So how do you manage that?
You know, family businesses are such a fascinating topic, because the ones that master it are run exceptionally well. And we're fortunate here. We have a really good family business dynamic. But I think a lot of it comes from the first generation, whether that's first generation, second generation, the parents, however you want to classify it, understanding early on that their kids are there to be mentored and nurtured, and should be, you know, groomed the same way you do as a parent to make sure they're good people. You need to do the same thing to make sure they're good leaders and managers. Because when they don't, and they don't build their skills on those things, that's where the dysfunction comes from. You know, I think there was a survey, and we saw the number years ago. It's like 50% of founders have concluded that their successor isn't prepared to take over the business. And if that's the case, whose shoulders does that fall on? It falls on that first generation who hasn't held, you know, Jack and Sally, or whatever the kids' names are, accountable. It hasn't helped build the skill set so they can be successful in the family business. Or alternatively, if they can't be successful, hasn't pushed them out. You know, you see that a lot of times too. Well, you know, we got to keep them here because it's just a job, and it's, you know, we're going to provide for them. You're not doing your kids any service by keeping them in that situation, by not allowing them to go find their own path. Because when the time comes for the transition, they're not going to be capable, or they're not going to want it. And then you're going to find yourself in a whole different problem.
Yeah, that would be difficult, because you have to turn it from a transition to a sale.
Yeah.
Right. And you may not have planned for that sale, and now you devalue your company in a big way because you don't have the right things in place.
Absolutely. No. So I think it's such a hard thing with the family businesses to make sure that that next generation is capable, or they're pushed out the door because they're not going to be the successor, and to have those very candid conversations. There's also the need, you know, there's so much complexities in this, but to leave, you know, what is family business at home versus personal versus family business at the work, you know, and create that separation. And that gets complicated, you know, as There's spouses involved, or there's children now and cousins and everything else. So the more the number of family members involved, and the number of generations, the more complex it gets.
Yeah, I agree. I've got six children. Okay. And I'm an entrepreneur. I want six entrepreneurs. Okay. But
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. Okay. Now I have a couple. I have one of my twin boys is just hardcore. The kid is, he's at a friend's now for 3 days doing business, right? They started their own thing online and
Yeah.
got the equipment and they're doing it. I love it, right? So they're always looking to do that. A couple of other kids do things differently, and my daughter's one, and loves to be at business with me and work with me and do this stuff. So I'm doing like what you said, though. I'm at least creating the leadership skills. So whether it's their own thing or they can be part of a great team to help someone else with their business, whatever that's going to be. But I've definitely learned. I'm also a homeschool dad, right? So we homeschool our kids. So we get all kinds of attention on them, right? And see that we really get to understand their abilities, right? Their learning methods and everything else. So it's kind of like my little workforce, right? In a sense, I got to gear it this way for him, this way for her, this way for my oldest, and you have to do that. It's very similar to running the business, So, and they're just getting in their teenage years now too. So it's pretty fascinating to watch. And I think, I bet we could do a family business. I always think about that. Oh, my wife has no interest in that, so we're good there. She's not in for the family business. Okay, so it's good. She likes me doing it, but she leave her out. So I that's why I always like to ask people, and I am impressed by people who pull it off. Because it takes discipline, it takes a lot of not just confidence, but personal I don't want to call it security. I'm losing the word. Just it's a self-confidence, right? It's enough
It is.
that you can work with each other and understand strengths and weaknesses, and then focus on those and let each one contribute what they can contribute and appreciate that. Don't expect, more from one that they can ever give. That's probably what it comes down to, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So if someone's gonna they set the strategy, when do you find the best time to sell? Is there a rule of thumb? Now, obviously, maybe, and it doesn't mean that, hey, the economy crash is not a good time to sell. It could be a great time to sell. It could be a great time to buy. So it could go either way. So do you have any rules of thumb as far as when to sell your business?
I mean, I think there's always an understanding of where in the cycle where the cycle of the market is, right? So we were telling our clients 2 years ago, now's the time. Things are going well, numbers are up, there's active buyers, it's a good time. And we had a number who did. But we also had that, what happens when things are going good. We kind of get that little bit of a greed factor, like, can we push it a little further? And that's what you're seeing right now, right? Because now is a harder time to sell the business. Everything has gotten more complicated because of COVID and the resulting impact of it. So, I guess that's always like timing of everything else is, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And when you look at the When you start to assess the market, you need to know when that timing is, and it's instinctual. If your advisors are selling you, yeah, it's probably time. Multiples are good. You want to get out. Don't push it just to make a little bit of extra money, because you may end up losing more money on the overall standpoint, or you may lose your window.
Right.
So.
Also, the other factor there too is you got to mix in that ego,
Yeah.
and that connection with someone's business. Like when that time, like you, like, and it could have been 2 years out, 5 years out, or whatever. But then all of a sudden, if you're a few, the timetable's moved up because this is the time to sell. Then you got to be able to let go. You got to keep that open hand. Like, okay, well, this is what it's my number. I set this number. It's a couple of years earlier than I wanted to, but I gotta follow the plan, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think some of it is just, being instinctual about that, knowing when to move. And I think, for entrepreneurs or business owners, that's hard because we're used to gambling. We're used to pushing the envelope and taking a little bit more risk. But if you can take kind of a step back at it and go, all right, let's look at the scenario. What are we really dealing with here? You know, you make those moves rather than, it's like kind of time the stock market, right? Everyone takes their money out when things go bad and they sell and then the market pops and they miss the up piece.
Right. Well, so, it just comes back to this. And I talk a lot about, it's about having a wise counsel.
Yeah.
Right. It's about having the teams in place that are going to help you maximize your business, because you do need someone who's not emotionally attached to your business, who can look at real numbers, look at the real market, and give you, you know, honest, objective, you know, advice, right?
Right.
And it's just so, I just look at it, like I said, I had people who wanted to help me. I just was, you know, I was too full of myself and doing what I was doing long ago. And, you know, it would have been a much more beneficial thing. And it would have saved me money and made me money, and it would have all been rosy. But, hey, you know, now I get to help others not make that same mistake. So
Right. It's
really fantastic. Give us some parting words of wisdom, Michael. Tell us, give us a couple high points here.
So the one I always give my sellers as they're starting to contemplate the transaction is, ask yourself, what would you pay for your business right now? What is it that you would pick up and pick apart on it, you know, that you would like, that you would be valuable with? You know, take that step back and look at your business critically from the buyer's perspective. And if you can start to do that and then focus on fixing those things, you've got a much better chance of getting the exit that you want.
That is powerful advice, because I've talked about that as well, because I always talk about outside eyes. Okay, even as an owner, you know, you got to go out and look at your trucks like you've never seen them before.
Right.
You know, or actually get someone who's never seen them before and stand there and tell me what you see. What do I do?
Right.
Excuse me. But that's that thing, right? And like you said, you got to start looking at the broken parts, you know? I mean, it's just making a little noise, but it isn't stopping the production of the machine, but it's going to. Right. Eventually it's going to break. Yeah. So you got to fix that stuff early.
Yeah. Basically, don't fall in love with your business from that standpoint and assume that everyone else is going to see the value that you do.
Yeah. Amen to that. And that's what it is, because it's funny because I do talk to guys and they have these, I won't call them crazy. Let's call them crazy big numbers that they want for their business. And then we start walking through, like, you know, literally, you know, walking through and looking at it, and then all of a sudden those numbers really drastically decline, you know, and they're kind of sad by the end of the day, you know,
but
you can fix this, you know. Here's the thing, you know, it's not too late, you know, because if you're going to get basically nothing for your business, why would you get out of it when you can launch? You got your, guess what? Yes. Maybe it's going to take you 4 more years, 5 more years, 6 more years, whatever, but you now, so now is your opportunity to flip this and get it so that you actually have an exit strategy, whatever that might be.
Right.
You know, where you can create real value in that business.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, this has been just great.
I've enjoyed this conversation. It's been good.
Yeah, this is why don't you give us, you got a website, way for guys, people to get in touch with you, follow you. I think you have a podcast, do all this. Let's get people some information so that they can you know, talk to you and see what they can do with their business.
Yeah, so you can find us on the web at VAN, which is V as in Vermont, ANN-group.com. Or you can find us, you know, with our book, which I didn't even pitch, is our book, Buying Out the Boss, The Successor's Guide to Succession Planning, which looks at succession planning from the buyer's perspective on an internal transaction. You can find that on Amazon or at our website, buyingoutheboss.com.
You'll be able to find it in my show notes, too. I'm going to put that in there.
That's great. People,
I'm going to put that in there for sure. Totally skipped over that. How dare you?
I forgot all about that.
Author to author.
I do a horrible job of promoting the book.
You're awful. Well, Amazon's going to get mad if you don't move some more stuff.
Oh, I know.
That's how it goes. But
got to keep Bezos and happy.
That's right. You know, he's always looking for another $2.
Yeah.
That's all good. Well, that's awesome. I love it. Well, we should have talked about the book, but we'll do it again, because I've got, good. like I said, with my ETOP Academy, we do stuff like this all the time. Guys get a ton of information. They're really learning to build their businesses this way. And this is going to just be a ton of great, great, great information for these guys to start putting in place. And hopefully they'll reach out to you too, because I'm telling you, we got to seek wise counsel. Going to get people who've been there, who are doing it, who are experts. Because believe me, we're not the experts. So I'm always looking for experts to take me to the next level, right?
Yeah, well, anything we can do to help, we're happy to do so.
Oh, I love it, Michael. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Richard.
Out of your schedule, and I love it, man.
Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. You too. Anytime. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the ETOP Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you liked what you've heard, please leave a great review for us. Your subscription and review helps us reach more people so we can show them how to escape the owner prison. Also, check out the links in the show notes about today's guests and more ways to connect with ETOP on social media. Stay strong and keep moving forward with your business.